Well, yesterday was indeed a manic Monday. Quick bit of trivia here. Anybody know who wrote this song?
It's B-52s.
No, well, this is the Bangles performing it. Who wrote the song?
I don't care.
Can I take a guess?
Go ahead.
Prince?
Correct.
Usually that's the answer when you ask that question.
Or something really
obscure. Chris Christopherson?
No. Well, Chris Christopherson, you know, or Shel Silverstein.
You could envision Prince singing this. It'd probably be a hell
of
a hit.
Well, it sounds like a Prince song, but I think it's a little too lighthearted.
I was
Prince.
Working part-time at the Five and Dime. My boss was Mr. McGee. It's got that feel to it.
Yeah, same kind of vibe.
Yeah. Write it for some chicks.
What'd you do last night, Zoe?
Oh, I did a productive scouting session of the New England Patriots football team in a team setting. Bob Sosi and I, the voice of the Patriots, went on Patriots.com. We were actually up in our booth talking from the second the practice started until it had ended. So, almost two straight hours without a break of just describing what you're seeing, excitement of the year, the offseason. We brought Paul Perillo in for about 20 minutes, just bouncing stuff off each other and just sort of trying to knock the rust off before we're out there in front of the TV cameras next Thursday night.
Did you get Andy Hart in there too?
Andy Hart was holding out for more money or more steroids, one or the other through. We couldn't figure it out, but they're excited. We talked about you to have you in for the post-game show, Patriots.com.
That's right. Starting this year, I will be in with Andy Hart and Paul Perillo every week for the Patriots pregame and postgame show on Patriots.com.
So got to watch a lot of the new kickoff rules, which are going to be very interesting for people to see how they're going to use Cordarrelle Patterson in that situation. What Steven Gostkowski has up his sleeve. Some of the young tight ends around the receivers, the backs. The backs look great.
So you were calling the practice.
Calling the practice, but there was a lot of team periods within that practice. You know, where they did blitz, they did some walkthroughs. It was sort of a fast-paced walkthrough with shells and helmets on. It's a practice that they do each and every year for the season ticket holders and for people that live in the town of Foxborough.
So it's kind of like our show when we're at camp, except you don't get yelled at by Beetle when you react to a play that happened on the
field. Right. I'm going, oh, nice ball. Right.
Well, that was kind of my question, though, because how do you get – you're not supposed to be describing the action as the practice is taking place. There's like a media blackout of describing – the practice.
Correct.
So team broadcast, though, right?
I'm part of the team broadcast, and this was allowed by the team, actually wanted by the team, and sort of, you know, like when you watch the combine, and I know some people don't watch the combine, but if you ever watch the combine in February and they're doing all the drills, you have guys like Dion and Willie sort of talking over what they're trying to do is get the lateral timing of this athlete, and, you know, he was so good in his 3 years at Oregon, and they're talking, going back and forth while the guy's working out instead of just throwing up practice rule out there on .com and you sit there and watch silence. It's just to give you a little background while you're watching it.
Okay.
It was fun.
So do you feel like...
So I did football last night.
And you and Sosi are doing the TV call.
And they have new LED lights in the stadium. Interesting this year. Brighter stadium. Hell of a fireworks show at the end. Oh my.
How is it looking into those lights? Do you find them blinding?
I'm fine, Don, because I got the perfect vantage point in our booth, as you know. We're pretty much right there in a 50 looking down on the field.
Okay, but from down on the field,
I'd have problems if I was out there running around catching balls in it. Yeah.
It's going to be an issue.
I'd hate to be catching a punt and that ball gets hung up there in them lights. Never know where that ball's coming down.
Plus, especially if you're a rookie offensive lineman trying to get your team a couple nights
off. It was fun watching Isaiah Wynn, the rookie from Georgia, back there to field the punt. And this is the brilliance of Bill Belichick, right? Under league rules, you can only practice so many days straight now in training camp. So unless you lived under a rock or you didn't study your rule book or you didn't talk to a member of the NFL Players Association and they come and talk to you each and every camp, you pretty much knew that today was going to be an off day for the players. We knew it. We were planning to be here because we kind of counted the days and looked at it. And normally after the night practice, Bill gives them the day off. So he puts Isaiah Wynn back there and everybody's geeked up and Ryan Allen, he got one punt. Isaiah, you catch this, guys get a night off. You don't have to come in until the day after. He drops the first one, and everybody just falls on the ground, like, devastated, like, oh. And he stands up, and he puts number one up, like, give me one more chance. And then Jack Mason grabs him, and he's yelling at Belichick, give me one more, give him one more chance. And the team starts going nuts. And Belichick's twiddling his finger, and he goes, all right, what the hell? Give him one more chance, Ryan. Give him one more ball. Kicks it. Guy backs up, sticks it right in his chest. He catches it. The team goes crazy. Here they are. 90 guys, full well knowing, I mean, if you had a brain in your head, that you're going to get the next day off anyway. It seems like they didn't know last night until he caught that ball.
Right.
And they're running around throwing helmets. It was it was like crazy drill time. I'm like, oh, yeah, this team doesn't like to have fun at all.
But I think they got the nights off, too, so they don't have to come in for meetings at night either.
Something was See, everybody assumes that, oh, they didn't know, but Belichick fooled them on that one. He probably gave them the meetings off, and that's why they went nuts.
Because, like, you know what? Danny Shelton said they got two nights off, not days, nights.
Yeah, just get the hell out of here. We don't need to do film study until 2 days. Just go. Don't do anything stupid. See you in 2 days.
When in reality, the coaching staff's kind of trying to evaluate probably that first 5 days and like, all right, where are we? Where are we going
to
go?
We're going to
plan. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But what kind
of interaction do you see from, and this isn't just from last night, but last week too, if any, between Belichick and Brady? Because during the mandatory mini camps, that was talked about, the fact that they were working opposite ends of the field, and maybe it was just a circumstance. Maybe it was the way the sessions were set up, but the two really weren't talking during those mandatory mini camps. What about last week and then again last night?
See, Bill usually twirls a whistle throughout practice, and he always has it, and that's kind of his nervous twitch. Not nervous twitch, but that's the thing he does. And he was down there last week with Brady, and Karen Garrigan had this too. You know, down there by the tackling dummies having a discussion. It was pretty lengthy, but it wasn't heated or anything. It looked like they were in a football discussion. Right. Bill's sort of, you know, using his hand and placing it different ways, angles or whatever. So he's probably trying to say, hey, here's what we're trying to get from this guy, Tom. See if you could, you know. And it's sort of that working respect that, okay, we're working here. And then last night, Bill and Robert Kraft came out at midfield, dead midfield, and he and Bill are standing there. Bill's twirling a whistle and they're smiling or chanting for about 20 minutes. Ernie Adams is doing a walk around. Comes Ernie Adams. He goes, okay, we've got the owner and the head coach here. Who's really watching anything? Because Bill's being distracted. This is go time for me. So he takes his pad out of pants. He's looking at his pad in the back pocket and looks down. Okay, we're at kickoff drill. And Ernie's out there with his arms crossed. Next thing you know, ball snapped. Hands go to the knees. And Ernie lowers the vision level just by 6 inches. Doesn't get closer. Just lowers it. I was breaking Belichick's balls last week. I'm like, I know it's camp when Ernie Adams is out there. So, and Bill's cracking up because I know exactly what you're saying. He's standing there holding it. He goes, we laugh in meetings when we go back and watch the tape. At the snap, Ernie puts his hands on his knees and he's like down in a player stance. And he goes, you know how many years he's been doing that? I said, no, you tell me. It's your 44th camp. So if it's his 44th camp, it's got to be 46, 47 for Ernie.
50
freaking years of camps. 50 training camps. Imagine that, being Ernie Adams and these guys wearing campus camp. This isn't camp. This is country club. This is country club camp. Now, I know they had two hard practices on Saturday and Sunday, and it's hot. You got to deal with the heat. It's not a grind like when we played. Not even when I played, but when these guys coached and started coaching and playing, when they had suspension helmets, and you're doing 3 days. Back in the day, there were NFL teams that did 3 days. Steelers did them back in the day and in the 70s and 80s.
Which
I remember being at Lake Trobe all day with my dad, and it's just practice one, practice two, practice three. And three was more of a, yeah, let's stretch the legs out and let's just toss the ball around.
Right.
But still, you're required to be on the field 3 times.
And I know Belichick and other coaches have, you know, lamented the fact that they're limited now and how they can't get as much done and they're not as prepared. But if you go to back in the day to the 2 days and 3 days, what are you really accomplishing after, you know, by the end of that second and certainly during the third, when you said they're pretty much just kind of jogging around and throwing the ball a little bit? Are you getting better at that point?
Yeah.
Or are you just doing it for the sake of doing it?
Probably for the sake of doing it, or just having guys stay out of trouble. And I think that's a big thing. Sorry I took up that whole segment there, but I got a lot more to talk about, especially with the new kickoff rules and some of the stuff that I saw and some of the defensive stuff that I saw. This defense is going to be better than people think. But you went somewhere last night. Jim went somewhere last night. And I'm sure Captain Obvious over here went somewhere last night
or did something.
So let's get into that next.
Yeah, we'll get to all of those.
Find out what you guys all did.
And I want to talk more about the kickoff and the stuff that you've seen and some of the comments
you've heard
so
far. I was pretty productive last night. I wasn't just sitting on my couch. So I had a productive night last night. Absorbed a lot.
Well, I got a lot done. Jim had a...
I'm sure Jim did.
You know what Jim had last night?
What'd Jim have?
It was a significant parenting moment last night. This was like a milestone in Jim's life as a father last night.
And Jim, I think check it, something off.
It deserves to be acknowledged and I think applauded in many ways for how it went. Not literally, but we'll talk about it next. It's all coming together now. Two very good clues as to what the rest of us were doing last night. We'll start with the Red Sox, where Jim Louth not only attended the game last night, but he had company. Jim?
Yeah, I took my son to his first game.
How old is your son?
6, just turned 6 a month ago.
What's he, James Louth the 9th?
The 4th.
4th.
James Louth the 4th, who's been to a lot of Paw Sox games, but never a Red Sox game.
Where'd you guys sit?
We had great field box.
Ooh.
18, two sections over from the dugout.
First base or third base?
First base side.
Nice.
Right behind the new netting.
Did you tear up walking out through once you sort of walked up, you know, the runway and you see the ballpark?
Dan Roach.
And your son's there?
I didn't tear up, no. My son just ran right to as far as he could run, as close to the field as he could get.
Get
and our
dog?
Seats were only two rows behind that, so that was great.
So you were glad there was netting there?
Best seats I ever had.
Hot dog, souvenir, the whole nine yards?
Hosting this segment, Sarge?
I'm asking you a question, Jim. Answer it.
Wow. I don't think he's going to answer now. So, Jim, your son is a baseball fan and a baseball player, but beyond that, he was into this. He knows, and some six-year-olds don't know, don't care, but understood what Fenway was, who the Red Sox...
I walked out and immediately saw Xander Bogaerts, not jersey, like, facing back, facing front, saw his face, said, that's Xander Bogaerts.
Six-year-old. I mean...
Imagine if it was Larry Bird. If Larry Bird was pitching last night,
when Brody was,
Jim's kid would have cried.
When Brody was six and he took him to Fenway, does he care?
He wanted a second piece of pizza. But he would eat the first piece of pizza or the hot dog by the time we sat down. Like, I want another one.
Oh, no, no. He ate. He ate from about 6:30 till 9:45.
What'd you make it through? Four innings?
So this is what Zoe and I were talking about last night. We're like, there's no way Jim... And we thought it was going to be the whole family. And I know, like,
Hardy and I spoke before Jim and I talked this morning. And I told Hardy something.
So extra innings last night, I'm like, there's no way Jim, who lives down Rhode Island, had his six-year-old at the game and stayed past the seventh inning. There's no way. I mean, the kid's going to tap out at some point. So, Jim?
No, he made it through 11 innings. And he didn't want to go home. He wanted to stay till the end. He wants to see the final score.
I would say we should get, like, my kid and your kid together. I don't think they'd have anything to do or talk about.
It's easy to handle that.
Unless your kid's into Power Rangers, it ain't happening.
What you're going to do is you're going to turn around and you're going to follow me and you're going to get your ass in the car. Because we're going to beat traffic. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to leave. And what's that, seventh inning stretch?
So it was the ninth inning, and I'm looking at the lineup, and I'm looking at the Red Sox bullpen, and I'm like, well, Price made it through the eighth in the jam. I'm like, this game's probably going to extra innings.
And
then I went to the 10th, and I said, all right, Betts, Benintendi, J.D. Martinez were due up in the bottom of the 11th. So in the top of the 11th, I started talking to him. All right, we'll watch the Red Sox bat one more time, and then we'll go. Because it's about 10:30 at this point, which it's amazing they played 11 innings in less than 3.5 hours.
Well, they only scored two runs between them up until that point. So, yeah.
If I would have seen Joe Kelly warming up, I might have given him till the next inning because I might have thought the game was over.
I thought he was a potential All-Star, though. I thought David Price voted for him for the All-Star game.
But we had to go at that point.
So we turn around
and leave. It's the 11th inning. We're walking back. We're shaking hands because all the people in the crowd around us were trying to get him a ball from, like, the base coach, throwing it back because he's the only little kid.
Even the Phillies fans. You said there were a ton of them there last night.
Oh, a million Phillies fans.
And everyone's trying.
E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles chants everywhere in the stadium.
God.
Everyone trying to get him a ball.
No fights?
Almost between, there was a random group of Braves fans there sitting right next to the dugout, four Braves fans, and the Phillies fans were upset that the Braves fans were there because they weren't even playing.
So
they were just ragging on the Braves fans the whole time.
It's pretty cool, though. You took your son, your only son, to his first Red Sox game, and you being the Red Sox fans, that's a pretty good night.
And
you got to see a pretty good game.
And when they played Sweet Caroline, what did your son do?
Blocked his ears. He hated it. He had a glove. His glove on his right hand because he's a lefty. He brought his glove, and he put his glove over his right ear, and he put his hand over his left ear.
Love it.
How's that?
From the mouth of babes.
How's that?
So he waited until the parts where the crowd sung. He would have his ears uncovered, and then when the crowd was going to sing, he knew, so he covered his ears.
How many D-bags standing around you? Just beers in their hands.
Oh, the Phillies fans loved it. They're like, oh, Sweet Caroline's coming up, guys. Sweet Caroline's coming up. The Phillies fans loved it.
So, Jim, congratulations. Successful first Red Sox game with your son. It's a milestone. That's a big one.
But one more thing. So as we're leaving, like I said, Joe Kelly was coming in from the bullpen. We're walking up the ramp to walk out, saying goodbye to everybody. Joe Kelly's coming in the game. They announce him over the loudspeaker.
People start running.
Two guys to the left, two guys to the right. All go, oh, no. There was a groan over the crowd because Kelly was coming into the game.
Wow. Man.
I think it's cool that it went well.
That's
that he
great.
Didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay. I mean, that's and he has good taste in music.
Mm. Speaking of music, what'd you do last night, Tonto?
To that end, I went to a show last night. I was like, I wonder what this is going to be like. No. A rock concert.
A rock concert.
It's called the Revolution 3 Tour. There's three bands from the late 80s when you consider the Cult, and then 90s bands, Stone Temple Pilots, and Bush.
Bush! Now, breathe in, breathe out.
Now, Bush was considered like grunge light, right? For the music snobby guys, like, man, you know, this is in the era of like
the Bush.
You know, Nirvana and Alice in Chains.
Bush
it's like
better.
Bush came out and you're like, this isn't really they were just
Creed before Creed.
They were attaching themselves to the movement, but they weren't legit. They went on first last night. I guess they're rotating which band headlines. They got like you could make an argument for any of the three bands to headline on any given night.
Yeah, the lead singer's really dead, so it's kind of got. How about the Temple Pilots? Did they fly their plane in?
Oh, Dave. If Scott Weiland were still alive, STP headlines that show every night. But he's not. Scott Weiland died, what, December of 2014. So they have a new lead singer in Jeff Gutt.
So Bush and Stone were first.
Bush went on first.
Okay.
And I have to say, I was amazed at how good they are and what a great show they put on.
Love Bush.
That was impressive. So... Yeah. That's first. Then STP comes out. I'm like, what is this going to be like? Because I'm a big STP fan, have seen them many times, always with Scott Weiland, though. I never saw Chester Bennington from Linkin Park. Yeah. He fronted the band for a bit. You know, I saw different incarnations of STP when they were doing Talk Show or Army of Anyone with different singers and all this stuff. Here's the guy comes out. Zoe, he looks and sounds.
Oh, that's weird.
Just enough like Scott Weiland to make you think, oh, he's a good replacement, but it's not a karaoke act. It's not a tribute act. He's got enough Weiland in him to make you think he's a good replacement.
He's a good replacement,
and he can carry it, but he's not doing, you know, a Stratosphere in Las Vegas tribute to the Stars performance.
Okay, so, Temple Pilots.
With
Journey tours, and Journey's coming with Def Leppard to Fenway in August. They have the Asian guy that's the lead singer for Journey.
Yeah.
And he's got the long hair like Steve Perry had, but he really sounds like Steve Perry. Like, you close your eyes and you think you're really listening to old Journey.
Right.
And like, he nails it.
Which is weird with a voice as distinctive as Steve Perry's or Scott Weiland's for that matter. But it's not a total
Weiland,
sound alike. It's just he can hit all the notes. He can sing all the songs. And I was impressed on both counts. Mm. And for somebody who was reluctant to go to that show, just... Man, I don't know about Bush. I don't know, but reluctant isn't the right word. I really managed expectations about what I was going to see. It was fantastic.
Where was this at?
One of my favorite venues, Blue Hills Bank
Pavilion. Oh, Blue Hills Bank Pavilion. Who'd you go with?
Mike, MT.
Oh,
the boss
the
man.
The boss.
Yeah,
oh,
that was his date.
Oh, that's you.
It was a good show.
This guy gets all the good tickets.
A couple of rock guys, you know.
You guys the oldest guys in the building?
No.
You guys are youngest guys in the building, weren't you?
It was. You'd be surprised the number of 40-something-year-old white dudes at that show last night.
Well, they're at the thing.
Let me tell you.
They're the Corker show.
There were two dudes in front of us that I'm sure are going to be in here for Towny Jeopardy.
Yeah.
They were Towny Jeopardy to a T.
Lanny trolling the bands.
Oh, my God. They were so funny. One dude in the wife beater, and he would just... He's a good singer. He's chirping just random things. Like when they... Jim, you started playing Plush a minute ago, right? So they start doing the version of Plush, like midway through the Stone Temple Pilots set. They start this song, and this is what you hear. And this guy goes, "What song is this? I don't know this one."
Jackass. It's amazing the boss didn't like headbutt him or something. You know? Hey, yeah, so you went to the concert. I did football. Jim did baseball. What'd you do last night, Sarge?
You know, I was in a golf tournament yesterday, and I had a little too much fun on the 19th hole. So, in bed early and had a massive headache later.
Sounds like a hell of a night.
Yeah, it's a Monday, but what can you do?
Sarge, sneaky heavy drinker. He's come
in
here hungover on many a weekend.
Oh, no, yeah. Keep that quiet.
How's the AA meetings going?
Oh, like don't say
I've
that.
Got you. Well,
it's anonymous, so even if he could tell you, he's not going
to
tell you.
That's right. He'd love to tell you. He loves to tell you everything.
Yeah.
He'd be taking pictures at it.
I tell you what he loves to tell you.
Here's a selfie at the AA meeting. Hey, look
at the belt.
Look who I met at the AA meeting. He likes the big belt. Which belt should I take to the meeting?
So many selfies inside the meeting room, he'd be kicked out. Sarge loves to tell you what's going on in the world of sports, which he'll do right now with his update. And then we'll continue talking about the glorified walkthrough last night. And Sharks, we have two new Sharks stories, though. Well, you want to do one of them next?
Hell yeah, we are.
Okay, we'll do a shark story next. So what did you end up with in your house? All athletes? All three kids?
What do you mean? My kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All three of them.
They all three play sports.
We were just talking about Jim taking his son to the ball game last night. Jim, your daughter also plays ball, doesn't she?
Yeah, softball. Mm-hmm. That's how we got the tickets. Somebody from softball came to us.
Good softball player, too.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Your kids play sports.
What's your daughter's name again?
Frank.
Julia. You know,
I was going to ask Zoe first. Julia.
Yeah, Julia. Yeah.
All right. Well, hello to both of Jim's kids. Jim had a very nice parenting moment last night. It is. I was feeling nostalgic when he started playing Christopher Cross there. Now I'm going to make you feel something else, though, when we start talking about the latest shark story. This one is pretty simple. This is, I guess, just speaking to what you've been warning us about and what you have predicted, and that there will be a shark attack somewhere in Massachusetts, more specifically on the Cape. You believe it will be a North Shore person attacked. Yeah. As
stupid
they're on
person
vacation,
from the North Shore, yes.
Renting a place.
Townie, usually.
Down the Cape for a week.
Yep. Frankie, it's going to go down there with Jimmy and Johnny, and we're going to take our cars and just pack it up for the summer, get some Narragansetts, you know, some Natty Lights, you know, fill up the coolers, maybe get some sausage, some peppers, and get the rafts out there. You know, a big thing now we hear is paddleboarding. You know, all these kids down there, the crazy new craze is paddleboarding. So there couldn't be a more perfect place than the Outer Cape. Talking about Yarmouth, Dennis, Wellfleet, Chatham, Monomoy, you name it. Wherever these seals are, let's get our 11-foot paddleboard and just kind of go offshore a little bit. Maybe in about 3 feet of water. And let's just paddleboard out there. We'll get some sun. We'll do some tanning.
Well, the latest
tan laundry.
Latest report on this comes from CapeCod.com, where I'm reading. Dateline.
Not a fake story.
Orleans. It was a close encounter with a great white shark for a stand-up paddleboarder Sunday, and he didn't even know it. The man was on the board just off Nauset Beach in Orleans.
Oh, Nauset, where most of these sharks live and feed. Real. Again, what did I tell you?
You told me so much regarding sharks. I don't know. What?
It's the stupidity of the person is going to cause this accident. And you can't blame the shark.
Is it stupid to go paddleboarding?
Shark needs to eat. In Nauset Beach? Anybody from the Cape? Anybody online? 617-779-0985. Do you think it's smart to swim, paddleboard, or kayak anywhere near Nauset Beach off of Chatham right now? Or Orleans? You name it.
Photograph that's being passed around with the photo going to Cody DeGroff. And tweeted out by the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy says, and the CapeCod.com says, the man was on the board just off Nauset Beach and
it's
noticed
an 11-foot paddleboard.
Noticed a drone hovering above him. When he returned to the shore, the man who was the man was told the drone operator, Cody, had captured images of a shark swimming just feet away from him. Images were posted by the Shark Conservancy on Twitter. And that researchers also tagged their fifth great white shark of the season Monday off of Nauset Beach. Mm. Two other sharks were
did you see the pictures?
Were seen by their spotter plane off the head of Meadow Beach on Sunday. We talked about that, too.
Did you see the pictures of the one that was cut open that they caught in the net outside of Scituate?
Yes.
And that was a 10-footer. That's another big one. So just since I started, or we as a show started talking about these shark sightings and the potential of the disaster that could happen here locally. And we only been in studios for basically, what, 2 weeks? How many of these things are starting to pop up? Okay. The frequency of these sightings and encounters with sharks. It's the year of the shark.
And the sharks are hearing about it, and they're like, oh, well, they want to know if we're here.
Well, they know we're simulcast now. They're swimming around. You think they take a peek at the TVs at those sports bars along the beach? Come on.
First day of August tomorrow. It's always a big month for the sharks in the Cape.
You hear that?
Yeah.
Do you have any?
It's gonna happen.
Do you have any data to back that up, Sarge?
Yeah. Look at all the reports, all the sightings down there in August. It's crazy. Chatham.
Do you have them in front of you?
I'll pull it out.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to the phones. 617-779-0985. Johnny in New Jersey has been waiting to talk about Danny Etling for a long time.
Wow.
Go ahead, Johnny. What do you got for us?
Are you still there?
What's going on, fellas? How are you?
What's up?
Really good.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, one day at a time. I just graduated from the University of Alabama, and I'm down here in New Jersey. But that's why I wanted to call about Danny Etling.
Hell yeah, roll tide.
Roll tide, though. But in past years, you know, the Pats have got with names like, you know, Ryan Mallett from Arkansas, and then obviously Garoppolo, and rather if they decided they wanted to be the successor or not, they were nice little in case of emergency, you know, backup contingency plans. And then they drafted Danny Etling this year, and I'm no expert X's and O's. I know, Zoe, I'll let you take care of all that, but I watched enough football in my 23 years of life to know that this guy just sucks. He's terrible. Oh. I don't understand the pick at all. I was all for a quarterback. I didn't understand Etling. I think it's fair to say that Alabama is the closest replicated defense you'll get to something on the NFL. In two games against Alabama, he's a 46% passer. This is two games, mind you. 229 yards, no touchdowns, and two picks. And they scored a combined 10 points.
Did you see Edelman play quarterback at Kent State?
I did not.
Probably not too good, right? Maybe twice playing receiver?
Yeah.
I talked about Danny Etling at length last night for about 20 minutes. I said, I've been watching him for 4 days now. The thing that impresses me about him, to the caller's point, played at LSU. What'd they do? They ran an eye offense. All they do is get tailbacks. They get the 4.3 speed tailbacks, hand them the football, Leonard Fournette, you know, the Falks, you name it. All these guys have come out of LSU. And he would run the power eye, and he'd run the play fake out of the power eye on third and long. Not really coached well at the collegiate level as far as the mechanics. You get here, and now all of a sudden I see a kid that seats the ball well. When I say seats the ball well, two hands on the ball, right between the numbers, 58. It's weird seeing him wear 58 in a red jersey right now. But they'll get their numbers next week. And he doesn't overstride when he throws, meaning he has his feet up under him. He doesn't pump the feet, meaning he's stuttering or uncertain. It seems like when the fifth foot hits, he knows where he wants to go with the ball. And the ball comes out and he spins it well. The ball doesn't flutter, throws a nice tight ball. So from what I've seen so far, this looks like a guy that they probably did their homework on, because here's what they do. They go in there trying to look at the bolster this defense, right? So you go to the SEC. That's where all the good defensive football is played. You're going to see Georgia. They drafted the two kids, Wynn and Michelle, out of Georgia. So obviously they've watched games and probably saw Danny Etling make a play or two that opened their eyes. And that's how you catch on to these guys.
Well, you bring up Julian Edelman. Do you think, you know, they're looking at
not
him?
That they're going to switch positions.
Okay.
He's not a football player type, he's still going to be a quarterback. Yeah, he didn't put big numbers up. But what I saw, and I'm watching it last night, Jerry Shaplinsky, who is the quarterback's coach along with Josh McDaniels, is working hand-in-hand with Etling, basically not leaving his side. And I said, this is what you want when you send your kids to school. Three students, two teachers. I mean, you talk about the hands-on, one-on-one contact with guys as far as your ability to educate and work these guys. I'm not saying Danny Etling is going to make this football team. But say you do find a way to release him, slip him through, and get him on your practice squad. Because it's Brady and Hoyer. There's no chance I think Etling's going to beat Hoyer out. Hoyer's been brought here for a reason, to be able to get the offense in and out of the huddle. It's not going to be perfect with him either. Brady's your quarterback. He goes down, you got problems here, all right? No doubt about it. But Danny Etling is a guy that could stick as a third. I don't think they're going to carry three guys. See, I thought they were going to carry three last year when Brissett played really well in that last preseason game against the Giants. I said, wow, he just made the football team. They end up dealing him for Philip Dorsett. So, for Danny Etling, too, if he pops a little bit, he'd be a little trade piece. Now, somebody wants to carry three quarterbacks, a bad team, say, hey, Patriots, here, take one of our linebackers, give us Danny Etling. So we'll see what happens with Danny Etling.
All right.
Wait and see.
Mark in Rhode Island wants to talk Red Sox. Everybody else wants to talk about Sharks.
Good.
So we'll talk to everybody.
Good.
Next.
Good.
12:52, Zolak and Bertrand Hardy and for Beetle. Back to the phones. 617-779-0985. Mark in Rhode Island on the Red Sox. What do you got, Mark? Mark!
Hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, it's actually Matthew, Mark. But I got a personal story. I'm sitting home. I just got diagnosed with Lyme disease, so I'm listening to you guys and watching on TV.
I had it. Good luck with it.
It reminded me of my time, my first Red Sox game, 15 years old. My brother Tiny took me. Tiny was a big guy.
That's funny. And so his nickname's Tiny, but he's a big guy. They kind of do that, like, it's like a ha-ha funny nickname.
Right. So anyway, Yaz, who was my idol, I bat left and throw right. Frank Mazzola at third base. Eddie Pizzou at shortstop. I think Gary Geiger was still with them in the outfield. I can't remember for sure. But you'll never guess who pitched that night. You talked about him when you were going through birthdays.
Roberto Clemente.
No, he was the first black man in Boston, and he was a pitcher, Earl Wilson.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, he came to the Red Sox in 59. This is 68. So he's pitching. Back in the day, the pitchers batted. The balls, this was my first time at Fenway Park. The balls are going into the net, off the wall. They're going over the center field wall.
Balls everywhere. Into,
and they're playing the White Sox. The score goes back and forth, and never guess who hits a home run.
Who?
Earl Wilson.
Oh.
Earl Wilson. And
well, it wasn't a walk-off, but they win the game 10-9.
Where'd he hit it?
I believe it went over the center field wall, but I'm not positive about that.
I thought it was like right center.
It could have been. Okay. Are you with me?
No, I heard the story before.
Yeah, oh, wow, yeah, I can't believe you guys mentioned him. I'm getting ready to tell you about him. But,
well, yeah, right. We mentioned it earlier when Dan was in. Thanks for the call, Mark.
All right, Mark.
I appreciate it. Really? What's the matter with you? You just want to get to the shark calls.
Yeah.
All right. Nothing against Mark.
Thanks.
Baseball reporters coming up at 6 o'clock tonight.
Oh, God.
Calm ass.
Yeah.
50 years you can hear my son calling in talk radio telling a story about last night.
That's Jim Louth the fourth.
Hi, I'm James Louth the 18th. And I remember one year my bald dad took me to a ball game.
In the year 2068 when
funny week. Because I fell and I cut my chin and needed 5 stitches. And my dad bought me this big upside down cup of ice cream and I ate it. And the ice cream was coming down, running through my stitches in the bottom of my chin.
Yeah.
But I saw Xander Bogaerts. I didn't even know, that he had his number on. I knew it was Bogaerts.
In 2068, when Tony Maserati III is hosting the baseball reporters, God. Jim Louth IV will be calling in. And that'll be the conversation between the two of them. Let's go to Matt in Lakeville. Go ahead, Matt.
Matt.
Seals and Sharks
What's up, Exit 5?
Hey, what's up, Zoe?
What's going on?
Hey, I just want to tell you, I'm completely on your side with these sharks, man. I don't do it anymore, but I used to surf down in the Cape, and I avoid that place now because I used to see the seals coming up. And when those things pop up next to you, they look like horses. They're so big.
Worst thing is the worst thing you can do now, right now, and the things that have complicated things are the seal population in the Cape. Blame the damn seals. Remove the seals, you're going to remove the sharks.
I mean, it's all part of the same food chain, though, Zoe. You know, you got to have the seals there to feed your...
You know that cafeteria downstairs, this lovely new building that we're in now because of Beasley?
Yeah, I've been down
there. Yeah, you have that swipe thing now?
Yeah.
If there's no more items in that freezer, the swipe, not going to have high traffic areas going down there to where people are going down swiping the food item and paying on the honor system like we do each and every day here. Remove the food, you remove the employees.
Well, what do you do? How do you remove the seals? What do you do?
What do you think you do? There you do, say, here, baby seal. Yeah. You ever see a bat? Jeez, Hardy.
So you want to club all the seals to death?
Not to say club the seals. I think there's other ways you could remove seals. I don't know. You could remove woodpeckers from your house without her harming them.
How do you do that?
Trap them. And there's also mouse traps that are, what are they called?
So seal traps.
Yeah.
You'd have a world war with the animal rights groups.
Be a tough one.
I'm just telling you. I understand your argument, but it would be a lot of controversy.
Right. Wes, I didn't realize that, Sarge.
Telling you.
Sarge
has some shark data for us.
That is amazing
in
to
a
me
moment.
That the animal people have a problem of people removing an endangered species that is protected.
Well, you learn something new every day. There you go.
Yep, Wes
there you go.
In Rockland. You're on Zolak and Bertrand. Hardy in for Beetle. Hello, Wes.
Hi, Wes.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great.
Really good.
Yeah, so I surf a lot, and Nassau Beach is one of those places I avoid. When you wear a wetsuit, you look like a seal, and that's just not a good look. You're just going to see a shark come underneath you. It's going to scare the shit out of you, and you're going to cry.
Whoa!
Like,
first
can't
one
say
in
that.
New studios.
Yeah. Was that the first one?
They do scare the poo out of you, I tell you that. See one of them bad boys.
I don't think that was the first one.
Mm. No, was it?
No, we had one yesterday.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Was that yours?
Sarge, what is your shark data that you have for us?
Yeah, so you asked me to back it up here for August being the most sighted sharks down on the Cape. So this is an article from Boston.com last year.
Why are you stressing your words that way? Boston.
Just let him talk.
Can I please do
just
this?
Talk like you see me in the hallway.
Okay, how you doing,
Zoe? You don't have to fill time. Just talk normal. Hey,
okay.
Zoe, how you doing? I got something for you on the sharks here. Just looked it up online. What do you got?
All right, here we go. So this happened last year July 31st.
Okay.
Now, day before August. But then again, that was on the tip of the Cape Cod, elbow rather. Then August 10th, the beaches in Chatham were shut down because there was a sighting of a great white the day after.
We know all this.
He asked for the data. So it happened 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 times in the month of August. 7 separate times. 3 times within the same week, the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th in Chatham where sharks were sighted. And then on the 21st and the 23rd in Wellfleet. And then again, Nauset Beach, like the caller just said.
You could very well be right, but you still don't have the data. What were the shark sightings for July? What were the
No, I didn't talk about July. I said August.
Well, you just said there's shark sightings. You said there's more in August. So and I said, how do you know this?
You Googled just
right here. You Googled shark stories in August.
Sharks in August.
And found some.
Yes.
That is not a scientific extrapolation of data.
What do you mean what do you want? You turn your mic on and you said you've got something because of the month of August regarding these shark
sightings. 7 sightings. 3 within a matter of a week.
What I wanted.
I talked about the stuff we've seen since we've been on here at Beasley.
What I wanted was from data from Woods Hole or from the Shark Conservancy saying that there are more shark sightings in August than any other month
on Cape Cod and the
islands.
What's he got to say about it?
Yeah,
I'll talk
something
to you
like,
too. I'll make a couple of calls.
Sarge is going to make a couple of calls.
Yeah. I know some people.
You can't do it during your head.
You know what's got to be
either.
So cool for a weekend boater, though? Like, I got friends that are weekend boaters, and all they do is just go out on the boat. Some of them have the big ones, and whole families on it. And they love to go out towards Provincetown, and that's in Cape Cod Bay, the big bay. And you're out there with the whales. And
the whales?
If you go, the whales. You see the whale sightings. You see the whale boats.
Oil wells?
So you go out past Stellwagen banking it, and then you go around the tip there, and that's where where the sharks are, and that outside tip past Provincetown and down. Towards that elbow of the Cape. So if you make a muscle, that elbow.
Chatham.
Right there. Chatham's a sweet spot. To see, say you got like a 40-foot sea ray, and then you swim up next to one that's 12 or 13 footers. I wonder how many people like are just weekend boaters just totally crap their pants over the past couple weekends. Like, holy Jesus, we just saw something in the water, and we know what it is, and we are not swimming.
No, you want to reach down and pedal.
That's got to be so cool to see one of those, like right there next to the boat. I want to see one. I don't want to see one when I'm in the water, but I want to see one when I'm on the boat.
See, you're like I am with tornadoes.
Let's go.
Desperately want to see one.
Oh, my God. Don't you want to hit the planes and go chase them?
You don't want to get anywhere near one.
Okay.
This isn't sighting data, but this is a sharkattackdata.com. That's a website.
Okay.
There have been 7 attacks in Massachusetts.
Forever.
According to this website, yes. 1830, July. 1897, March. 1936, July.
Remember that, reading about that one.
1965, February.
February.
1996, July. 2012, July. And 2014, September.
There's 1 month.
Not one in August.
There's 1 month that's curiously missing from that
big
data.
Spot that's open.
The August was sightings. Get it right.
Well, you tell me how many sightings there have been in August
well,
versus
last year
other months.
7.
Versus other months.
7 last year. We'll see what happens this year. First day is tomorrow, kids.
The one in 1830, Swampskit, the shark upset the boat. A guy fell into the water the boat.
I'd be upset.
And there was one in February?
Yeah, February 1965.
February's an odd
Rockport,
one.
Granite Pier, Rockport.
Was it a great white one?
Scuba
was
diving.
It a great white?
Scuba diving. Doesn't say.
That could have been just a bull shark.
Could have been a tiger shark.
A what? No.
I think it's a macaw. Poking it with the pencil. Yeah, but what kind of shark?
A tiger shark.
A what? Sarge with the hub headlines.